Institute, an enlightening and positive forum exploring the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom in an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace. I'm your host, Care Hallenbeck. Dr. Bettina Schmidt is senior lecturer in the study of religions at the University of Wales, Trinity St. David. She holds a PhD in anthropology and a master's in anthropology and religious studies. A prolific writer and editor, her areas of expertise include Afro-Caribbean religions, spirit rituals and possession, the anthropology of violence and conflict, the presence of St. Patrick in Haitian voodoo, voodoo medicine in New York City, and more, much more. Currently, she serves as honorary secretary of the British Association for the Study of Religions and also sits on the board of Discus, the journal of the association. Dr. Schmidt, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me to join you in this program.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. First, how did you become interested in specializing in this field of study, as in the Afro-Caribbean spirit religions?
Well, it was a bit of a journey via different corners. I finished my MA on traditional medicine in Mexico and decided to continue with my PhD working in the Caribbean. Then I visited the beautiful island of Puerto Rico with the aim to find material for a PhD on traditional medicine. However, with the help of colleagues at the University of Puerto Rico in Rio Piedras, I got into contact with a priest of the Cuban religion Santeria. And it was so interesting to speak with him and to hear about his involvement in the religion. So I continued researching in the archive, in the library of the university in Rio Piedras. And it was really such a fascinating way to create our world and our culture, so that I flew back to my university and decided and spoke with my supervisor and decided to switch to do my PhD on Espiritismo Popular, the Puerto Rican version of Spiritism, as well as Santeria in Puerto Rico.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you. And, you know, I also want to back up a little bit as well. In the first place, where did you grow up? And did you grow up in a household that was religious or spiritual? How did the interest develop?
Well, I'm German, though I live now in the United Kingdom. Religion was kind of important, particularly for my mother. And so I grew up in a Lutheran German household and went to Sunday school and we went regularly to church, not only Christmas, but also in ordinary weeks. However, I was not really really involved in the church at all. But when I then decided to study anthropology, I realized from my first year that in order to understand other people, we have to understand what they believe in. So really, we have to understand their religion, their faith, in order to understand other cultures. And this is why I decided to study anthropology together with religious studies and African languages, in order to understand more about other cultures and other people.
Well, that's just beautifully said. Thank you for that. It does appear that what we believe about things tells a lot about how we perceive the world around us, the kind of filters or, you know, we're looking through.
Absolutely. I think really it is the way how we create our world. It's also a way how we behave towards our neighbors.
Yes, that's very, very well said, and we're going to get into that in this conversation, I think, how we perceive each other. Now, I noticed in one of your articles, I think it's Ocean Visits the Bronx, This sort of rung a bell with me because one of my alma maters is Fordham University, sitting right there in the middle of the Bronx in New York. And so the sort of connection, I think, between the Catholic Church and the development of these religions, we will get into in a bit. Mm-hmm. But could you please share some about this article? You say that spirit possession is a key practice within many Caribbean religions, but can be difficult to understand. Could you shed some light on this story and on possession?
Yes. Yeah, when I did my PhD on Santeria, and Oshun is one of the very important goddesses in the Afro-Caribbean, Afro-Cuban religion, I attended ceremonies, and so I observed spirit possession, but I really didn't go into detail in my PhD thesis. And then when I, years later, came to New York and when I was involved in teaching in Brooklyn College for CUNY, and I attended and did research among religious communities of Caribbean immigrants in New York, Brooklyn and the Bronx and in other areas, I found it so important to understand more about the core concept of spirit possession. Spirit possession is really a practice we encounter all over the world in all the different kinds of religion, and so it's not only something for Afro-Caribbean religion. And it's the belief that it is possible that the human body can become possessed by a deity, by a supernatural being, and then that this deity controls for sometimes 5 minutes, sometimes for half an hour, the human body. And so the deity can communicate with the other devotees in a ceremony via the body of this one person who is possessed by the deity. So the deity can celebrate and be engaged with the community via this practice of spirit possession.
And now you say this, you know, appears in other religions as well around the world. Can you give us an example of, you know, what religion and the form it would take, or what other word we might know it by?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is really a practice we encounter in Africa, the Zaz spirits. The Zaz spirits mainly possess women, and so it is quite a practice in even Islamic countries where women are and possessed by the Zaz spirit. But we can also see it in India or Sri Lanka or Japan or Korea. So it is really a practice where in some cultures it is seen as negative. And then the reaction is to exorcise the person so that the spirit leaves the body. And in other cultures, in other traditions, it is seen as a positive communication with a deity. And then the person has to learn how to control the deity, how to master the deity for this ceremony. So it is often seen as the call for the deity, for this human being to become involved in the religion, so to become a full member, to go through initiation rituals, and to become even a priest or priestess in the tradition. And really, when we look in the medieval time in Europe, some of the visions saints have had in the 16th century could also be interpreted from an academic point of view as spirit possession.
Huh. Now, Bettina, what would an observer see? I mean, how does one know when it's happening? Mm-hmm. When someone goes into this state?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the Afro-American religions I observed, you see this, at the beginning, the first moment of encounter is often quite erratic, and so sometimes a person even falls to the floor and shakes. However, then when the possession is took place, and so when the person incorporates a spirit, then the whole body movement, the whole behavior is different. So a woman can suddenly present herself quite as a, in a male way, as a quite of a macho way. Or a man can suddenly present himself quite with feminine characteristics.
Huh.
So the whole way of movement, the talking, is different in this moment of incorporation.
Now, so this kind of spirit possession happens to both men and women, but it does tend to be perceived as a female-based activity,
yeah, yes,
or part of the ceremony.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, what is the role of women in the spirit religions, or you know, just the how are women perceived?
Mm. Well,
because I know you focus on gender specifically,
yeah,
in your work.
First of all, the spirit possession can happen to both gender, and so not only to women but also to men. However, women are apparently more drawn into this experience. It's quite a physical, a body experience. So we can see and even encounter in a lot of also academic literature from other areas that more women are drawn into the possession. I think it is, well, sometimes it's interpreted the way that in a society where women are a bit suppressed by the husbands or fathers and so by the male figures in the society, the spirit possession is the way to present their own view of the world and so a more feminine active role. And so it's seen as a kind of empowerment for women in some cultures to become a medium and so to become seen as a medium for a deity to communicate messages to the wider world. And so it is sometimes regarded in some cultures, in India, for instance, or Africa, as a positive empowerment for women.
Thank you. Now, it's interesting that you point out that while non-initiated people are usually not allowed to attend most ceremonies, for example, in Puerto Rico, you found the New York communities were more open and accessible, and you were invited to several, not all, but to witness several of the ceremonies. I think that's fascinating, and I'd like to ask you more about that because you have found an increase in female participation in this, in New York and elsewhere. Can you share about the increase and what you experienced in New York?
Well, in New York, I think New York has a much more an openness towards outsiders.
Yeah.
While in some areas, because spirit possession and the whole practice of Afro-Caribbean religion is sometimes regarded from a quite a negative point of view. You look at voodoo from Haiti, it is often portrayed absolutely negative in the popular media and the popular culture. So people try to close the doors in front of strangers. And me being a blonde white woman coming to the Caribbean, of course people were a bit reluctant to invite me to ceremonies. And so I interviewed people and I attended some ceremonies, but people were quite distant. And New York is much more open because in New York, people from other ethnic groups are also involved more and more into the Afro-Caribbean religions. So, of course, it started with Puerto Ricans joining Cubans in their religion, but then also African-Americans joining Cubans in the religion. And so to see a person from a different ethnic community involved in or attending ceremonies is seen as more normal in New York than in other places.
New York normal.
Yes, kind of. New York normal.
It's a different set of parameters. I appreciate that. Now, do you sense in your research that this increase is responding to something in particular? For example, you know, the harder times, what's happened in the nation in recent years, or is this a broader trend that's more, you know, worldwide? What do you think are factors increasing the trend?
Well, it's a bit up and down. I just came back from a research in Brazil about a similar kind of religion, so Afro-Brazilian religions. And they were described a couple of decades ago as the predominantly female environment. But I noticed also quite a lot of men attending these ceremonies. And I think I can explain this with a change in the constitution of Brazil and a different openness of the society towards its religion. And I think we saw in the 1970s and 80s a similar openness in New York. And so people were not afraid to attend the ceremonies and participate in it. Because of it's a tradition. It's legal. It's a kind of a new entity of the New York culture.
Yeah. And you know, it sounds also like it's very attractive to try to reconnect with, you know, the earth and the elements and parts of nature that can be so, you know, disconnected.
Also reconnect with the home of the parents who immigrated from the Caribbean.
Ah.
So it's also a way to find something about where come I from, what is my culture, and where are my roots. And the religion helps particularly young Caribbeans to feel Caribbean again, even in New York, and even being U.S. citizen.
Mm. That's great. Yes, the lineage, the heritage, the line. That's a great connection there. Now, while we're here, why don't I just ask in a general way? You know, just simply, how did this religion develop? We're talking about the Afro-Caribbean religions now, and where they evolved. Just you know, sort of historically, time frame, what transpired. You know, so our listeners sort of have a brief foundation.
Mm. Well, all the Afro-American religion, the Caribbean, but also Brazilian religion, of course, are connected with the transatlantic slave trade. And so go back long into the past of our history. In particular, colonies where Roman Catholicism was quite dominant, enslaved people were allowed to celebrate festivals in honor of a saint, for instance, St. Patrick or Virgin Mary. And so people who were not allowed to celebrate and worship the own tradition from Africa were given Catholic entities to worship. And they used them, they celebrated then festivals in honor of a Roman Catholic saint or the Virgin Mary, but used the rhythms and the drums and the other paraphernalia really to honor African deities. So in the 16th, 17th, up to 18th century, started a merger of African elements hidden under Roman Catholic iconography. And then after the end of the of slavery, the formerly enslaved people went to the urban cities in trying to find work. It was extremely difficult because people often didn't want to pay them because before they were enslaved and now suddenly they wanted salary. And so it was an extremely difficult situation socially and political. And in these difficult times, small temples, small houses started in Cuba, but also in other areas in Brazil, surrounded by people worshipping the same deity, the same spirit. So houses for saints became founded in urban areas, and these little temples, Casa di Santo, became then the foundation of the religion, which started then in the 19th and 20th century.
Mm. Now, so you say that in order to pacify the slaves, for example, the Spanish government allowed the mixing of the Yoruba deities and the Catholic mm-hmm. saints, but then it still remained like a hidden practice that was not really approved of?
Yes, officially, Christianity, Catholicism was the only official religion in the Spanish islands, in Cuba and Dominican Republic, in Hispaniola, where Haiti came from. It's Christianity was the legal religion. However, in local tradition, African elements could survive through the long period of slavery.
And when you use the phrase African elements, could you describe a few of those? Like, what would be the African elements brought and mixed here? Mm-hmm.
Well, quite a strong influence came from the Yoruba tradition. And so the name Oshun, for instance, for the goddess I mentioned earlier, is a Yoruba deity. Jemaja is similar, also a very important Yoruba deity. Ogun is a male deity, also from the Yoruba tradition. And so the whole idea about cosmos, about the orishas, the deities influence the destiny of human beings, is an African element which came over and merged then with Christianity. Because nowadays in Voodoo in Haiti the same, there's the belief that the Christian God created the world, but in order to help in our ordinary life, we need the help of more deities who are a bit below the creator God. The creator God is too occupied or too busy or too distant. But the orishas or luas in voodoo are available to help human beings.
So these would be more like worldly spirits.
Yes,
that would be here.
Yeah,
and are there many, many spirits of all different kinds of parts of nature and other influences that are called upon?
Well, the number has been reduced through the centuries of suppression through the slavery system. And so in Africa, the number of the orishas is much higher than the number of the orishas nowadays. But yes, there are dozens of different deities. And every deity has special connection. Oshun is similar to Aphrodite, a deity. People pray to her for problems with partners, with love, with children, and so she is more responsible for relationships. Jemaja is regarded more as the mother figure, and so she is prayed to in problems, and then other people would speak with the mother. People pray to Jemaja.
Now, thank you, Bettina. You mentioned earlier that Orisha is formerly Santeria, and I wanted to ask you about that. Why the name change, and what was the purpose of this? Why the change from Santeria?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the name Santeria is still well used in literature and economical discourse. However, more and more people move away from the term because it reminds them of this connection with Roman Catholicism, because Santeria derives from the Spanish term santos, saints. And in order to express that it's The roots are in Africa, and so to focus more on a stronger connection to Africa, nowadays people prefer the term Orisha religion, and so the religion of the Orishas. Well, in Cuba also the term Lukumi is used, but and so in order to step away from the past and the connection to the slave trade and to focus stronger on Africa. It is quite a consequence of the Back to Africa movement and the Black Power movement in the United States. And so its influence is stronger re-Africanization of the religion.
And that's a fascinating journey. I mean, the overlap of cultures here and history and, you know, the effect of popular influence. It's very vibrant. I mean, you just feel the changes and the growth and development and continuing today in new forms, in its own forms, in modern culture. Now, what would you say, I mean, as a scholar, what is the extent of the practices today, if you know? About how many people would you say practice the religions, and you find that increasing?
Yes, it is, but it is quite interesting. It's very difficult to get exact numbers because often, even in countries where there is a national census asking for the religious affiliation, people often shy away to indicate that they believe or practice some of these more new or different religions, and often people then would take just Christian or even specific Christian domination instead of saying that they also practice some of the other traditions. And even people themselves, I would say, are often, oh, I serve the spirits. I'm Christian, but I serve the spirits. And so I my official religion is Christianity. However, in my daily practice, I believe and worship also the African spirit. So numbers is really difficult to indicate. When I was in New York, I heard that in the tri-state area around New York, probably 3 million people are involved in Santeria. However, this is just guessing. We don't have the exact figure.
Could you say that?
Nonetheless, we know that the numbers are rising. People, because more and more people from non-Caribbean background are also now drawn into the religion. We have priests and priestesses in Europe with temples in Lisbon, for instance, in Paris, in London, in Berlin. Are people involved in the worship of the Orishas, of the spirits of Africa, of the Caribbean?
Well, thank you. That's wonderful. And I just wanted to ask you one more question, because we began talking about spirit possession and the spirit rituals. I just wanted to ask, what is the purpose or the benefit, the goal of spirit possession as a religious practice? What is the hope coming out of
really
that, of the connection?
Question, yeah. It is, I think, for the person itself, it is an expression. People can behave in a way where they normally would not behave. They can express characteristics or part of the personality which are often suppressed by regulation or by the society. So they can outlet a different kind of personality. For the religious community, for them, spirit possession is the means of communication with the deity. And so there are two different kinds of functions.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's so interesting, the perception of these things. You know, the kind of trance-like state can happen in different faiths. There's a story of St. Teresa of Avila, the mystic, who in some meditation would go so deep she would begin to levitate, which she found an incredibly humiliating thing to happen as her sisters would help hold her down. So that's all it's all a matter of perception, I guess.
And
we can get more into that in the second part of the program. We're about halfway through, so stay on the line. and we're just going to take a quick break for a station ID. Bettina, hang on. You are listening to the Godspeed Institute live on the Progressive Radio Network. When we return from the break, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Bettina Schmidt, Senior Lecturer in the Study of Religions at the University of Wales, Trinity St. David. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Godspeed Institute. You are live with CARE, and we're speaking with Dr. Bettina Schmidt, Senior Lecturer in the Study of Religions at the University of Wales, Trinity St. David, and expert in the study of Afro-Caribbean religions. Bettina, I wanted to ask you, because we were at the end of the first part of the program, we were getting into misconceptions and different perceptions people have of spirituality, and you know, voodoo is a big part of this question, particularly perhaps the early part of the 20th century when Hollywood was including images of voodoo dolls, zombies, people in trances in films. What was the effect of this socially upon the Afro-Caribbean religions, and can you please speak to the misconceptions?
Yes, I think voodoo is probably the most misunderstood religion in our world in the 21st century. It's when you look back into the history, Haiti was just the second independent state in the whole Americas after the United States was founded. A couple of years later, Haiti was managed to get rid of the French colonization and managed to become independent. And this was for all the other European masters a totally shock. And I think in this situation, Haiti was founded 1804, people tried to find something to blame. Why could it happen that this people managed to get rid of Napoleon while the European countries still struggled and fought against Napoleon? And in this situation, the religion became seen as the element which was so dangerous that in the decades or in the years after the Haitian Revolution,
Any ship, for instance, trying to make trade between Haiti and some of the other ports in the Caribbean or in North America, people were not allowed to leave these boats because the countries were afraid of black sailors and everything connected with Haiti. And so I think the irrational and hardly understandable fear started really going back to the Haitian Revolution and the success of independence in 1804.
Thank you so much for that. So, when people in the West, for example, Americans, who still very much have the zombie fascination, it's just, there's all kinds of new movies and Halloween costumes and all of this. Is there any truth to the things like voodoo dolls, or are we really just have been misinterpreting a religion that, as you know, we've learned is closely aligned with a Christian faith and a Catholic expression? What are we not seeing about voodoo? And I think it must have a terrible effect when things happen, as has happened in Haiti with some tragedies, that people wind up blaming their practice for what goes on there.
I think, years ago, in an event at the National Museum in New York, there was an event where Karen McCarthy Brown, an apology colleague, spoke, and the priestess, who was known under the name Mama Lola, was also in the audience. And someone asked about whether it is really possible for a voodoo priest or priestess to kill, to harm people. And Mama Lola stood up, or the priestess known as Mama Lola, and she just looked at the person asking the question. Well, voodoo is there to help. It's a positive. It's a healing tradition. However, everyone who has the power to help can also harm. So I think this is a danger where people then get afraid of a priest and priestess, because they can communicate with the deities and can influence the destiny according to the belief system. They can influence the destiny of human beings by persuading the spirits to do. And while this is done in order to help people, the fear always is in the back of the mind of people, or they could use the power also to harm people.
Right. But if the perception more is that this is for healing and for positive support, and it could be perceived as an intercessory prayer, much the way, the earlier part of the tradition there of Santeria, could engage the Catholic saints. In a similar way, to intercede in a situation to help, is a more accurate perception?
Yes, but we cannot ignore the fact that people are afraid.
Yeah.
When they see traditions of animal sacrifices practiced, people are afraid because they see blood, they see, they smell it, and this causes afraid among other people, and this causes then misconception and misunderstanding.
Yes, and possibly it's aligned somehow more with witchcraft or some sort of dark magic.
Yes.
Now, why don't you fill us in a little bit more about your latest work in Brazil? Because I know you had a rather extensive time of study, I think, and I think in 2010 might have pulled together some new research. But what's going on in Brazil?
Well, I had the opportunity to go to Sao Paulo in Brazil, and I was connected to the university, but with the help of colleagues and students at the university, they introduced me to various different religious communities, and I had then the opportunity to observe a lot of ceremonies and interview people about spirit possession. So my aim was to understand what is going on when somebody is in the in the moment of trance, when spirit takes over the body. And so I try to interview people and try to find out what they can remember the moment of the 1 hour or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And this happened, and some of them could not remember anything, and some of them could describe really, really nicely and how it felt for them when the spirit approached. And sometimes some of the mediums are possessed by different spirits, and so they could also explain to me how the difference feels. And so it was a fascinating time for me in Sao Paulo.
And so the people who could give you a description of what happens seem to be having a coinciding experience of the possession plus the ability to observe it.
Yes.
Which is helpful, I'm sure, in your studies.
Mm-hmm.
So are there messages being brought? Is it deities, or is it also for example ancestors? What is the veil that's lifted?
I also interviewed spiritists in Brazil, and they get messages from ancestors. So from not always their own ancestors, but ancestors of a person in the room, and so they can then convey a message from that father, grandfather, and so on. Mm. However, in most of the Afro-Brazilian tradition, the message is from some of the spirits. And so then the spirit can see that a person has a problem and then can help the person by giving help, advice about the problem. Mm. So it's a different kind of messages. In Candomblé, even a spirit, the deity, are not really giving message. It's more that the whole ceremony takes place when the medium is dancing around, or it's allowing the deity to be part of the community, but without any communication. The communication is then done by oracle reading, and so divination techniques via a priest or priestess and not via spirit possession. And so I encountered various different forms of spirit possession.
Thank you so much for that answer. Now, Bettina, in light of all we're exploring on the program, I'd also like to focus on your work with the British Association for the Study of Religion and what kind of projects are happening today. I know recently you were one of the organizers of a conference and call for papers on the public benefit in the study of religion. Could you share some about that experience as well as what the benefits are?
Yes. This is what my colleague from the University of Kent and I, every day, and I try to discuss with our colleagues, because when we try to get funding from the government or research councils, the question is often, what is the benefit for our society when you want to have money for research? What is the benefit for the society? And we try to find and discuss the importance of showing that the public benefit, and so for the society, of investing money in researching other religions, that the study of religion is an important way to understand more about our society. It's not only to study about the big religions, Christianity or Islam, but it is also important to understand something about the alternative spiritualities.
Yes, and I'm sure there's so many traditions, folk traditions, large and small, everywhere that you know, connect.
Yes.
Up against, you know, the larger world traditions as well. We try to explore as many as possible here, A to Z, on the program. So we know, of course, that, you know, understanding and tolerance tend to come from the more we learn about each other. Now, how have teachers and researchers engaged with the idea of public benefit? I mean, either directly or or indirectly? What are some of the results coming from the studies of religion and the conferences?
Mm. Well, on the one side, academics often argue, well, it is important to also acquire knowledge. This is also a public benefit, that we study something to know more. However, the aim of the panel I organized was to show that we have to defend, we have to justify research income, the research money we try to get from the research council by showing also the wider social and political value of our research. When we, for instance, with the spirit possession and the women, and I mentioned in the first part of the program the empowerment of women through spirit possession. On the other side, in Cuba, there are, for instance, women associations to help women who have terrible husbands or other problems at home, and so there are then women's associations. And so the research can also link to these associations and show them that religion can also be seen as a positive tool in helping women to become a more independent person in the society.
Mm, thank you so much. Now, you are also involved in the Alistair Hardy Religious Experience Research Center that's part of the university, and you oversee a master's program in religious experience. This is very interesting to me, not only as an academic study, but just in terms of everyone's personal experience of religious experience. Mm-hmm. Can you share with me what is religious experience as defined by this research, and also some about the Alistair Hardy, lecture series?
Mm-hmm. Yes, but as a background, Alistair Hardy, he was a scientist. He studied biology and so came quite from a natural science background. But he became a professor for biology and was knighted for his work in biology. However, he was also interested in understanding more about the human spirituality. And so he started the research center while he was at Oxford, and so at the beginning it was at Manchester College, Oxford, and announced in the newspapers, it was in the 1960s, announced in the newspapers that everyone should write to the center and describe their experience. And so his question, that so-called Alistair Hardy question, it was, have you ever had a spiritual or religious experience or felt the presence or power, whether you call it God or not, which is different from your everyday life? And if yes, then he asked the person to send him cards, letters about the experience. And this is really the start of his archive. And so founded 69 in Oxford, it became, well, his private passion. Mm-hmm. And then later on, the center moved first to Westminster College at Oxford, and then a couple of years ago, the center was moved from Oxford to Lampeter, where it is, still is in the University of Wales, Trinity St. David. So we have the archive, we have all the letters and cards people sent to Sir Alistair and later on to the center, with their description of their own experience. It's often not always a Christian experience. It's sometimes a experience in going through a forest or seeing a sunset. And so it is sometimes quite a personal spiritual experience, feeling the presence of a dead relative in a room. And so it's quite a wide range of different experiences people in the UK have sent to Sir Alistair. And in this need to understand better what religious experience is, a colleague at Oxford, Peggy Morgan, created this MA program, master program in religious experience, which I now run at the University of Wales, Trinity St. David. So students can come to us and trying to understand more the academic study of a variety of experience, which we call religious or spiritual experiences.
And that's so, it's fascinating and terribly important, because I imagine more people have religious experiences than they're realizing. When you ask them that, we think in terms of categories, and people, of course, might think of the church or what happens in church, but that's not what this is actually exploring. It sounds like I had a major religious experience about 100 miles north of where you are, up in Carnarvon, and although I might self-identify, say, as a Christian or through the Catholic tradition, this was beyond any particular category. It was beyond, it was a complete opening up of something in the, you know, in the universe, and a very powerful experience that would then help me define, you know, what came after that and what went forward, even in, you know, just in my own life. And I'm sure there are many people who have those kind of pivotal experiences in life. They may not call them religious, but it's wonderful to be raising them up and exploring them as you are, and calling them as they are, an experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this is important that people realize the diversity of these kinds of experience. Often nowadays people shy away of the term religion, religious. And often, well, a colleague who did a research on young people in the UK, often they don't say that they are not religious. However, they sometimes describe religious experiences, but yeah, under the term spirituality.
Yes, yes. And of course, there are, you know, there's a trend of getting stuck on the terminology as well sometimes, where people are, you know, identifying, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious.
And the aim is really to have a very broad understanding that religious experience can be also something about feeling the presence of somebody who has died years before. So it's really a wide range of experience.
And is there a particular goal of the Alistair Hardy series in terms of what, you know, is it just an archive, or are we looking to study all the, you know, the various types of religious experience towards some outcome of understanding?
No, it's a research center, and so we want to do and sponsor and or ask for funding to develop a research project all over the world. There was a couple of years ago a very big research funded by the Templeton Foundation about the Alistair Hardy questions, but in China. And so colleagues developed a questionnaire and gave them out, I think, more than 5,000 questionnaires in China, and trying to understand the diversity of religious experience in the Chinese and the Han Chinese context. This was quite really successful, and they collected important material about the experience in China. We tried then a bit afterwards to have a global study funded with colleagues in Turkey, in Brazil, in the Ukraine, and in the UK. However, unfortunately, the credit crunch happened, and so we didn't get the funding.
Right.
but this is something we still want to continue. We had just last year a conference in Taiwan. The colleagues in Taiwan got funding from their own research council and did a similar study, which was done in China and the mainland, in Taiwan, and then we compared the findings of the two research projects. And they also invited colleagues from Turkey and from the UK and from Brazil over to speak about their own research. And it was really a fascinating encounter to meet colleagues working on religious experience all over the world, and all connected to the research center.
Well, thank you so much for that, Dr. Schmidt, and for all of the topics of this very full hour of Afro-Caribbean religions and spirit ritual and things happening in different places and all of your good work in the UK. As we come to the end of the program, I wanted to let listeners know that all of your website and contact information will be posted on our homepage shortly at GodspeedInstitute.com. I wanted to thank you so much for being on the program today. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I just want to thank you again.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for inviting me to talk with you. It was really a pleasure for me, too.
Oh, same here, and please stay in touch.
Yeah. Thank you.
And now, listeners, before we wrap up for this week, since we're talking about spirituality and cities and people finding their way, I wanted to offer this commentary called All for One. It happens every so often in big cities, and it happened here on this night. Sitting on the subway, going home after a long day at work, a conductor announces over the PA system that we have a sick passenger on the train. It's rush hour. A groan goes up from the masses because we know what that means. The massive train grinds to a halt at the next station, 34th Street in Manhattan, where we sit for as long as it takes to obtain help for the man, to discern his chest pains and the condition of his heart, to collect the medical personnel to help him from the train to a gurney for transfer according to proper procedures. This could take a while. We sit, all of us. The entire West Side train line has come to a halt. Thousands of New Yorkers are waiting for trains or are on trains along the line that have stopped for the incident. There are countless rolling eyes and pressured sighs and sarcastic comments and all manner of frustration on board. Yet this is the barometer of the city. Everything must stop for a life. The day that the city doesn't stop for one life is the day it has lost its soul. And so sitting there on this night, stuck, powerless, late, complaining, and enduring, the disgruntled commuters form a community and a great sign of solidarity and dignity toward the human person. Thank you for joining us on the Godspeed Institute today. This program was recorded live on the Progressive Radio Network in New York City and produced by Michael Hallenbeck. If you would like to hear this or any of our previous programs again, or send it to someone, simply go to GodspeedInstitute.com. Please send your comments to office@GodspeedInstitute.com. We always enjoy hearing from you. And remember to join us again as we continue to explore all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems right here at 2 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday at prn.fm. Until then, we wish you Godspeed on your journey.